Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, not for much longer, as Jordana will be doing the afternoon thing with Paul Douglas. We just had Paul here on the program. What was it, a week or two ago? So it was great to hear his voice then, and it's going to be great to hear it when you're driving home. How you doing? I'm Moose Miller. Glad you're with us here on WCCO right there. Working hard behind the scenes is Kevin Reed, who we couldn't do this show without. I'm really looking forward to a number of interesting guests tonight, including at 9:35 here, Carol Henderson is going to join us. She's the head of Minnesota's DNR non-game wildlife program. I came across this article on ravens. Apparently, they are incredibly smart and have memory. They remember things. And they can also plan for the future, apparently. So we're going to learn a little bit more about that. And with 86 degrees right now, we thought it might be a good idea to take a look at sunglasses and stuff like that with the heat dome that we've been dealing with here and beautiful weather in the daytime. All good sunglasses have these five things in common. And we'll run through some of that from our friends at Popular Science. I love their online version. Always love reading through that. But we're going to start off the program here with Dana Fedema, Corrections Unit Supervisor in Hennepin County for the Intensive Supervised Release Program as we focus in on the parole of O.J. Simpson and just parole. You know, what are the responsibilities of a parolee? Dana, good evening and welcome.
Hi.
You know, I was just reading here the conditions of OJ's parole, which, you know, he'll be out starting October 1st, and it sounds like he's going to try to move back down to Florida, but that will involve, I guess, officials in Florida signing off on that?
Yeah, that would be through an interstate transfer through a compact that is all the states are involved in for transferring parole supervision.
Is that pretty common?
Yeah, it's widely used in all the states.
And is it something that usually goes through pretty easily, or can it get tripped up, or what are some things that, you know, you kind of have to make sure you got set in place? I would imagine a place to go and good people to be around.
Absolutely. The transfers are mandatory, except if they're going to live with immediate family, as long as the placement's appropriate and supportive and a good place for the person to reside.
I don't know if you got a chance to watch OJ's parole hearing today, but I'm kind of curious what you thought if you did.
I didn't, unfortunately. I was doing the work of the county, so I wasn't able to see that today.
Well, I did, and it was interesting. The first thing I noticed was from the last time I had seen pictures of OJ, he's lost some weight. It's almost like he mm-hmm. knew today was going to be the day he was going to look good, you know, and you know, be lean and mean and ready to come out into the world. That was the first thing that struck me.
Yeah, I was happy. I guess I was happy to see him looking so healthy. Some other photos I had seen of him, he looked ill.
Yeah, he looked a little bloated. I will say that for sure. But, you know, at the same time, during this hearing, he did look, you know, somewhat anxious and really like he wanted to get this thing over, but he knew he had to put up with it. And it sounds like, you know, for the purposes of so many people that were tuning in today to watch this particular parole hearing, they went through a lot of verbiage and things like that. How does that compare to like what we do here in Minnesota for a parole hearing?
Well, parole hearings are only limited to prior life sentence offenders here in Minnesota because we have determinate sentencing. So when someone is committed to prison in Minnesota, they have a set sentence and they serve two-thirds of that in prison. And then they come out on supervised release, which is what we call parole here in Minnesota, for the last third. And they can be returned on release violations to complete the rest of it or a portion of it if they have issues or problems. So Minnesota system is quite different.
And when it comes to Minnesota system, do people have to wear like an ankle bracelet or anything like that when they do get released or, you know, at least through the remainder of time that they may have had to serve? Or how does that all work?
High-risk offenders are often put on electronic home monitoring when they're released, either through GPS or a typical electronic home monitoring unit. And then also as a result of violation, that's a tool we can use to keep clients in the community and working and in programming, but address violations.
And as far as notifying communities where people are going to be moving back into, is that something that the state has to do, or how does that all work?
Well, there's a community notification system for predatory offenders in the state of Minnesota, and obviously people are really familiar with the level 3 predatory offenders. Those meetings are community notifications when people move into the community or when they make moves from one place to the other. There's also level 2s and level 1s, and those notifications are done by law enforcement at a lesser level depending on the situation and, who their victim was. Are they near a school, that kind of thing.
All right, so in Minnesota, if you're on supervised release, how long does that last?
For that last third of their sentence. We
okay.
do have some offenders who are specific, most often either criminal sexual conduct offenders or DWI offenders, and they can have conditional release terms of 5 or 10 years once their sentence is up. So when that third is done, they actually start a lengthy conditional release period, which is treated just like supervised release. And we do have a small portion of criminal sexual conduct offenders who actually are on lifetime supervision. But that's a pretty small, it's obviously a hard standard to meet.
And when somebody's on supervision, do they have to check in with a parole officer? Does a parole officer check in with them?
Well, there's many levels of supervision in our state because we determine levels of supervision based on risk. So what their risk is to reoffend and also their needs. So there's assessments that occur in the prison system that help us to place people once they're on supervision. The highest level of supervision is what I'm involved in, which is an intensive supervised release for the highest risk offenders. And those offenders come out in a one-year phased program. They're seen at least 4 times a week initially for the first 4 months, and that goes down to the last phase. The last 2 months, they're just seen twice a month. They are also on house arrest for the first 8 months, and they're often on some form of electronic home monitoring or GPS.
And how easy is it for individuals like you or authorities to swoop back in and grab somebody up, or do you check up on people unannounced? How does all that work?
Well, all offenders that come out from our prison system have a list of standard conditions, and and they're also, they can have a wealth of special conditions to, address various things. And they need to be, everybody is subject to unannounced visits. If you're on intensive supervised release, you're receiving a lot of unannounced visits. If you're on low risk supervision, you might be seeing an agent in an office more often, but still be seen by an agent in the community occasionally.
Now, I'm reading here that OJ, he can drink alcohol, but as a condition of his parole, he could be tested for his blood alcohol level, I think, just by somebody checking in on him, right?
Yes. I mean, that could be through a UA or through a breathalyzer test.
And that could be as simple as a parole officer just showing up at his house or wherever he's staying?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And the state of Minnesota, offenders, when they're released from prison, they can't use any mood altering chemicals, which in this case includes alcohol and also possession of drug paraphernalia. So that is a difference with Minnesota.
And if you're caught, under the influence, that's a condition that can send you right back to prison?
Well, often we try to work with offenders, obviously, but some of the decisions that are made are based on their risk and has their historical use led to problems or offenses or offense behavior. Because part of our job, sure, obviously, is to protect the community. So we have to weigh the benefits of keeping offenders in the community or making a decision to have a hearings and release unit hearing with them to make a decision about what the best path is. Is there a treatment option in the community? And a lot of that just comes down to the risk they pose if they continue to use.
All right. What happens if I get in a car crash texting while driving?
Well, it would be a new violation. You'd have to report that to your parole officer if you were on supervised release within 24 hours. And a decision would have to be made about, you know, what else is going on? Have these driving violations been a problem again? And how would they contribute to other issues you're having?
Ah, okay. Yeah, well, like, let's say I got like 3 or 4 speeding tickets before this, you know, after I'd since been out on supervised release. And yeah, and then I get a pretty serious deal where, you know, you're involved in a crash, people are injured, and it looks like, you know, you're at fault for texting while driving.
Yeah. I mean, we want to be careful about who we spend our money to incarcerate. You know, we want to focus on the highest risk clients, and obviously speeding is a dangerous thing and texting and driving is incredibly dangerous. But if there's a way to address that in the community through sanctions, you know, that's, you know, something that should be explored.
Sure. Well, I was just reading here too, the conditions for OJ. It sounds like he might be able to get a doctor's prescription to smoke medical marijuana if he so chooses. I'm not 100% sure with Florida's law. I think that's where you have to have a medical prescription for it, but
Yeah. And that's obviously a new thing we're dealing with because we have clients that come in from other states that have laws as well about, you know, the use of medical marijuana, and they have to have a certification that they have a doctor's prescription for that drug and a viable reason, because outside of that, that would be a violation.
Do you think that, you know, people are going to be really watching OJ more than anybody else? I mean, we now live in this world where, you know, every move you make, you know, people have smartphones, they got cameras, the ability to shoot video just like that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, sometimes, you know, we run into a lot of, you know, we're in an age of everybody basically carrying a computer around in their phone and a camera and all kinds of things and video. And, you know, sometimes offenders don't realize that all eyes can be on them. And we find out a lot of stuff, a lot of violation information based on the fact that, you know, we're in a different age.
Sure. But, you know, here's a guy too, that I think any money that he makes, obviously the attorneys for the Brown family and the Goldman family are going to try to, you know, garnish or grab that towards the judgment that they won in the civil lawsuit. But you can't touch things like his NFL pension. And it sounds like living in Florida, too, that if you have a home that you own there, that, too, cannot be grabbed up as an asset that could be used to satisfy a judgment. So, interesting. As you watch somebody like OJ with the notoriety that is around him, do you think that at the age of 70, he's got a real good chance of, you know, staying out of jail and staying out of prison? All the experts that have been running around on the various shows tonight have been saying that they kind of feel like at the age of 70, the recidivism rate is really low.
Yeah. I mean, if you read the research, you read a lot about, you know, people aging out of crime, aging out of that criminal behavior, slowing down, so to speak, with some of those behaviors and just having different priorities and interests. And the researchers show based on his age that he is at a lesser risk.
Wow. What a day. It seems like it was 2008 and we were talking about the Las Vegas trial and the eventual conviction. And The really interesting thing was, I guess he turned down 2.5 years that were offered by the state, with the prosecution saying, look, if you just admit to this, we'll make it two and a half years. And he said no. And so he went to trial and he served 9 of 33 years.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So obviously a bad decision there, but interesting. Well, it's interesting to hear that, we have a little bit different system here. As you explained, we have supervised release, and really the only time that you have a parole situation is for people that are sentenced to life in prison.
Yeah, through our old life sentence provisions. So a lot of those offenders have been in prison a number of years and are being reviewed through with the Commissioner of Corrections through a license review process. But it's getting
Interesting.
to be a smaller and smaller population based on the fact that that's an older statute that's no longer used.
Sure. Makes sense. Dana Fedema, Corrections Unit Supervisor in Hennepin County for the Intensive Supervised Release Program. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
It is 9:23. I'm Moose Miller sitting in tonight for Jordana Green here on WCCO. Thursday night in CCO land, 86 degrees. We'll check in on that WCCO weather forecast coming up here in just a little bit. I'm Moose Miller. If you missed the big announcement earlier today at 5 o'clock-ish as to what was going to become of the John Williams afternoon show, the news is Jordana Green will be hosting with a guy that I think you probably remember, Paul Douglas. Remember Paul from Channel 4 and before that, Care 11 TV? Yeah, so they'll be doing a show together starting up on August 1st. So a couple of people that really know Minnesota, and I think I have yet to run into anybody that doesn't think that's a great idea. And just one that kind of caught me by surprise, I went, wow, Paul, that's perfect. We just had Paul on the show here. When I was filling in for Jordana a couple of weeks ago. So, and Paul's done a lot of radio over the years. I remember working with him when, a little bit at WCCO here, but back in the 90s when yours truly was on Turn Your Knob to Bob, the country station in the morning, we did our weather partnership with Care 11 back then. And I remember working with Paul and Belinda and all those folks. So, it's really neat to see that he is kind of back in the CBS family here, so to speak. And we wish him and Jordana the best. I think it's going to be a great combination and a great show. I'm very excited for both of them and excited for WCCO Radio. I think that's a real tip of the cap to Shannon and to Lindsay and everybody in the upper echelons here at WCCO. Smart move there. Really, really well played. All right, coming up here, we're going to catch up with Carol Henderson from the Minnesota DNR's Non-Game Wildlife Program and talk about ravens. Ravens are smart birds, man. I mean, incredibly smart, to the point where they can actually kind of think ahead or plan ahead. There's some interesting research out on that, and we're going to talk with Carol about that coming up here between 9:30 and 10 o'clock this evening. This story kind of caught my eye. A man's prosthetic leg saved him from drowning. At least that's what this man is crediting. He went overboard during a fishing trip. His pants inflated with air around his prosthetic leg, which he then used as a flotation device. Adam Shannon of Doylestown, Ohio, was out fishing on a lake when he went overboard. His leg came off as he went in the water, but remained trapped in his pants, filled up with air. So he used his leg as a flotation device. It says here, while calling 911. So he must have had a waterproof phone. He was able to yell and catch the attention of a couple nearby who got in their boat and paddled on out and tugged him to shore. So, wow. Interesting. And if you love potato chips, and who doesn't, right? Lay's potato chips, pick a flavor, a new one contest is back. And there are three new user-submitted flavors that will be hitting the shelves at the end of this month. You know, the competition or contest is called Do Us a Flavor. I think we talked about this a while back. And some of the previous flavors, like biscuits and gravy, oh, that sounds good. Wasabi ginger, good as well. So here's the three that you'll be seeing on store shelves near you. Everything bagel with cream cheese. It's a salty flavor. Maybe as a breakfast chip, I guess. Also, fried green tomato. This wavy chip tastes a little tangy, a little peppery, a little grease-soaked bready. Apparently, a guy in Georgia who loved eating fried green tomatoes submitted this idea. He says it'll take you back to your youth. And finally, crispy taco. I would have thought Lay's had a taco-flavored chip a long time ago, but I guess you think more like along the lines of what, like Doritos or something? The chips, according to some reviewers, taste extremely close or like Taco Bell's taco. All right, so it's kind of got a lettuce, tomato, and cheese flavor. Some say you can even taste the ground beef built into the crispy taco Lay's potato chips. I see Kevin is already sketching a note on this, so should hit store shelves on Monday, July 30th. And the voting will then run through October 8th on Lay's website, so you can vote for them as to which one will be added in. But those were the three that got narrowed down, and one of the three into one leaves. You know, kind of a gladiator kind of thing there. I'll have to take a look for that. It is 9:32. We'll come back. We'll check that WCCO weather forecast for you next.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Yeah, put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. Moose Miller in tonight for Jordana Green here on WCCO. It is 9:36. We reached out to Carol Henderson, head of Minnesota's DNR's non-game wildlife program, to talk a little bit about ravens. Good evening, Carol. Welcome.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I came across this article on ravens, or I think some people would call them blackbirds, right?
Yes, yes. We have ravens mostly up in the northeastern quadrant of Minnesota, northeast Minnesota.
Yeah. I think of the raven bird in It's a Wonderful Life. There was one in there that with Uncle Billy, that was his pet bird at the bank, I think, right? At
yeah, the Bailey ravens Savings have a long history of being in literature, both over in Europe, England, and across the northern United States, and up into some of the Native American culture stories and legends.
Sure.
Also.
Well, you know, Edgar Allan Poe and all of that good stuff.
Right.
But what caught my eye here was not that they're ridiculously smart, because I always thought they were, but they're able, I guess, to be able to determine, people that study ravens, that the bird seems to be able to plan for the future.
Right. They think through in processes. There's a person out in Washington named John Marsloff who's studying crows, and crows and ravens are in the same family. They're the most intelligent of all the bird families. And he referred to crows as flying monkeys because they were so smart, and the ravens are even smarter than the crows. So these are birds that are constantly aware of their environment. They adapt to different environments. They're able to figure out how to take advantage of various food sources throughout the year. And even more intriguing is that they have an ability to identify details even on people to identify faces from people that it might have been either helping them or are chasing them.
Yeah, it says here that they rival chimpanzees in cognitive self-control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just hard to believe these things are going on in their mind. And we don't have a whole lot of connection with ravens in daily life. They're very alert birds. They typically don't allow you to get very close to them. And so we will get fleeting glimpses of them if we're visiting up in the Boundary Waters canoe area or far northeastern Minnesota.
How big do ravens get? Because, you know, crows can get to be a pretty good-sized blackbird.
Yeah, ravens would be probably upwards of maybe 16, 18 inches long, but about 25% bigger than a crow.
And they have as far as a wingspan?
Wingspan probably just a little over 2.5 feet, probably.
Hmm. Wow. And I'm reading here, ravens can imagine being spied on?
Yeah, some of the researchers who have done work with these birds keep coming up with new ways of evaluating their intelligence. And with some of these birds, they're saying, well, they rival the intelligence of like a seven-year-old child in some ways, that they reason through things and figure out what's going on. And I had a discussion once with Bud Grant about a pair of ravens he had when he was young over in northern Wisconsin. And he said that they were incredible pets. That was back when it was legal to have ravens for pets. And he said that they liked to tease each other. And one of the ravens' favorite toys was the little crank from a car door that was used to crank up the window because it was nice, shiny silver color.
Uh-huh.
And the other raven knew that was his favorite toy. So just to torment the other raven, he would take that crank and fly it out into the forest and just drop it in the woods. And then the other raven would have to fly all over out there trying to find his little crank and bring it back to the yard where he could play with it.
Oh, my God.
And he just kept doing that again and again. And Bud just had all kinds of wonderful stories about having those ravens as pets.
That's amazing. And I would imagine then that they must have really good eyesight.
Oh, yes. Very, very sharp eyesight. They're able to take advantage of spotting things at great distances and take advantage of, you know, both foraging on dead animals and finding fruits and other things as well along the way.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, are they kind of a carrion eater?
They will eat carrion. In fact, several years ago we had a deer hunter up in northeast Minnesota at Teteguit State Park who took a deer, and he had noticed in the past that the entrails that he left in the woods always disappeared very quickly, like within a day after he took the deer. And so he put a trail camera out, and within several hours, it was all gone. And when he looked at the footage of the trail camera, there had been probably over a dozen ravens, a golden eagle, several bald eagles. These birds all came in. There was also a rough-legged hawk. And they were all foraging on this. But because of the vocabulary that these birds have, they kind of share information. And so this was in pretty thick woods. So I think the sounds brought in this huge gathering of birds. And the reason the deer hunter was concerned is that he had taken the deer with a lead bullet, and the fragments of lead expose the birds to potentially lead poisoning. So he was concerned about this, and I think was going to start switching over to using copper ammo because he didn't want to be poisoning bald eagles, golden eagles, or ravens or other birds either.
So it sounds like, you know, and boy, you've really boned up here on your raven knowledge here. I'm very impressed. But it sounds like ravens then communicate not only with other ravens, but, you know, with crows and hawks and other birds?
Yeah, well, the ravens themselves have an extremely diverse vocabulary, and it's not something that we totally understand, but they're able to communicate. And the person who was doing the work on crows actually found that there were people who were using rubber masks who were capturing crows, and then some of the people were treating them well, and other people were treating them, you know, kind of harassing them after they caught them. And the crows were able to remember what those people with the rubber mask looked like. And whenever they saw them around the college campus at the University of Washington, the crows would come out and harass what they considered to be the bad people. And they were able to transmit that same hatred of those people to the next generation of crows, even though those younger crows never had seen those people before. So there was some...
Are you kidding me?
No. Now, if you look up, the guy's name is Marzluff, Marzluff, John Marzluff, at the University of Washington. He's done most incredible research on the ability of crows to understand their environment and to transfer knowledge by basically communicating with other crows on topics that, help them survive.
Are ravens like crows? Do they like to gather and hang around in groups?
Yeah, they can be very social. In the case of crows, one of their biggest problems is that their biggest predator is the great horned owl, because the owl will hunt them at night. And the crows will sleep in a roost where there might be dozens or even hundreds of them, depending on the time of year and so forth. But the owl can go in and capture them at night because it has a good night vision. And that's why sometimes if crows find an owl in the daytime, they'll start harassing it and making a lot of noise to chase it out of their area. So sometimes...
Yeah, I've actually seen that. I've seen where an owl has been chased, you know, when I'm out hiking around or whatever, and it's just amazing to me. And you're talking a dozen or more crows, or maybe it was ravens, but they're going after that owl like nothing I've ever seen.
Yeah, because that's one of their arch enemies.
But in the daytime, they hold an advantage. Then.
Right. In the daytime, if they find the owl, they'll try to chase it out of their area. And so it will go elsewhere and bother other crows, I guess.
And what's the lifespan of a raven or a crow?
Boy, I'm not sure what that could be, but I'll bet it would be exceeding 5 to 10 years, maybe more. They're incredibly intelligent. So once they get to adulthood, they could last a long time. And again, that's why they acquire all this knowledge and then are able to pass it on with others of their species.
That's what's amazing to me, is they pass on like a bias or, you know, a sentiment that, you know, human beings do this too. And man, that's really amazing.
Yeah. And this whole family of crows, this includes blue jays as well as crows and ravens. They're all very intelligent, also magpies. And they can make it extremely hard to do research on them, because the crows figure out what's going on, the ravens figure out what's going on, mm-hmm. and the researcher has to try to stay ahead of them.
You know, you mentioned blue jays, and I've noticed over the years that packs of blue jays will go after a crow.
Oh, yes. They'll, because the crows will go in and they'll steal the eggs and chicks from their nest and eat them also.
Wow, that's... That's a pretty harsh world out there, isn't it?
Oh, it is. You know, one of the more unusual stories that I've come across in learning about these birds is there's another kind of a crow from New Caledonia that they were studying, and they would drop seeds or nuts from someone dropped nuts from a high enough elevation that they would crack open. But in some towns, they were dropping the nuts in intersections, so that the traffic would run over the nuts and crack them open, and then the birds would fly down. But they would only fly down when the light turned red, so the traffic stopped, and then they could fly down and grab the nut meats and go.
That's amazing.
So they do have a certain ability to reason that we really have to appreciate that, there are just a lot of fun things we learn about with nature around us, even in the city. A few years ago, we had a family of barn swallows that learned how to get into one of the local lumber yards, because they would fly in front of the electric eye, the doors would open into their entryway, and uh-huh. they nested inside the entryway. And then when they wanted to go out, they flew in front of the electric eye, the doors open, they would fly out. And they actually came back several years in a row and raised a family, and because they were safe inside the entryway. There were no predators that could get in there.
Oh, sure. And it's warmer.
Yeah. So they were well protected, and somehow they accidentally figured out if they fly in front of that little glass globe, the doors open and they can go in and out. They didn't wait for people to walk in so they could follow the people in.
Now, I'm reading here in this article about them that they had an experiment that involved teaching ravens to use a token to barter with humans for a food reward. Basically, the ravens gave the token to a person, and then the person gave them a treat in return.
Yeah, that's a pretty incredible learning ability, isn't it?
And the ravens were largely able to correctly select the token for future use when presented with a range of other objects that obviously weren't tokens.
Right. So that's where this planning ahead comes in, where they're able to figure out the different alternatives and which ones have the biggest payoff for the future.
Yeah. For example, they were willing to forego a reward in lieu of a better reward after they had been trained to know that that better reward would come 15 minutes later.
Yeah, you would just wonder what is going on in their heads when they're figuring this stuff out. And then,
you know, I worry the Defense Department is going to get a hold of this, and you know, they're going to go, you know, why are we building drones? Why don't we ravens?
Train the ravens. Yeah,
man,
pretty amazing.
That is,
and you know, that's one of the things that we try to do with our program in the Department of Natural Resources. I've been in charge of the non-game wildlife program now for 41 years, and I've been able to work with lots of different wildlife species and restoration programs, and work with a whole array of wildlife. And the more we study them, the more we appreciate them, and just find that they just really do enrich our lives, because they might be pretty and fun to listen to, but also there's a lot we can learn from them, too.
Oh, sure. You know, I often, you know, when I'll run out in the country out at my in-laws' farm in Iowa, I'll know on, like, these country roads, there are certain areas that you got to really pay attention, not so much for blackbirds or, you know, crows or ravens, but those doggone red-winged blackbirds are so territorial.
Oh, yes, they are.
They'll come off of a fence line 50 yards away and just start going at you.
Yeah, they'll just swoop down at you. Yeah, they're very territorial and very widespread. You know, they're one of the first birds to come back in the spring. They're one of our signs of spring here, and one of our most abundant wild birds as well.
How are ravens doing in the, you know, in environment today? I mean, are they endangered at all, or they're
plentiful? No, they're so smart that they take care of themselves very well, and if anything, they keep adapting to new environments. So they used to be more widespread all the way down to the Twin Cities. And now we get a few sightings, maybe up in the Carlos Avery area and the northern part of the metro area. And I think, again, they're adapting, figuring out new food sources. In some places in Canada, they become very adapted to city environments. They haven't done that so much, you know, in central southern Minnesota. But I think that there may be opportunities where we'll see a few more showing up in more southerly locations. And we've seen this with another northern bird over the last 20 or 30 years. It's a small member of the falcon family called the Merlin. And And those nest up in the Canadian Prairie provinces and up in the Arrowhead region of Minnesota. And they've been slowly working their way down so that now we have some of those actually nesting in the Twin Cities. Mm. And they're a very small bird, about the size of a kestrel or even a little bit smaller than that. And they often are found nesting in tall spruce trees in cemeteries or golf courses.
Wow, this has just been a fascinating conversation. I'm so glad we were able to track you down and reach out to you.
Oh, you're sure welcome.
Yeah, I think people have learned a lot about ravens and crows and probably come away with even more respect now.
Yeah, and what
Carol
part of
Henderson.
Iowa are you from?
Quad Cities, Davenport.
Oh, okay. I grew up right in the central part, about 25 miles northeast of Ames, and I still own part of our family farm down there where I have some land in CRP for wildlife and keep in touch with the family down there.
My wife's family's farm is near Mechanicsville, Iowa, which is just off of Highway 30. So it's always good to get back out to the country, that's for sure, unplug a little bit. Carol, thank you so much.
Okay, you're certainly welcome, Moose, and feel free to call back anytime if you've got some other things to mention
okay,
or talk about. And also we need to keep people aware that one of the greatest ways they can help Minnesota wildlife is that each year when they sit down with their tax forms, they can donate to the non-game wildlife checkoff. And that's where we get our funding to help preserve a lot of our wildlife species.
Well, good. I'm going to tell people.
They're doing so well, they don't need much help, but a lot of other
people put a post-it note up on the calendar to check off the Minnesota DNR checkoff.
Yeah, that helps a lot.
Excellent. Carol Henderson, thanks so much.
Okay, you're sure welcome, Moose. Thanks for calling. Bye.
You got it. The Maplewood Toyota time is 9:54. When you need a new car or truck, it's time to check out MaplewoodToyota.com.
I'll sing you a song after the loving.
I wonder if he'll do a live version of that on John's show tomorrow. Moose Miller in tonight for Jordana Green here on WCCO. So today, July 20th, is National Moon Day. Yep. Because the moon landing happened on this day, July 20th, 1969, as Apollo 11 set down on the surface of the moon. Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin then eventually did walk on the moon. Armstrong stepped out first. This happened 6 hours after they had landed successfully. And they spent 2.5 hours outside the spacecraft. Aldrin spent a little less time, but together they collected nearly 50 pounds of lunar material that they brought back to Earth. Michael Collins, who piloted Apollo 11, remained alone in orbit until Armstrong and Aldrin returned. And did you see tonight where one of those collection bags was auctioned off by Sotheby's, I believe, and it was not supposed to ever be auctioned? Somehow this woman got it at a government auction for about $950, and she sent it into NASA to say, hey, can you verify this for me? And they're like, well, this should have never been sold. She had a big, long lawsuit with NASA, but eventually got the bag back and the verification that it was indeed genuine. Today it sold for $1.8 million. Pretty good return on investment for $950, huh? CBS World and National News coming up here next on WCCO.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.